Welcome to Crewcast, the Crew Network podcast that features top thought leaders in commercial real estate, shares important industry insight, and inspires change.
Welcome to our Crewcast industry series, which examines trends, hot topics, and disruptors across the major sectors of commercial real estate. Today, we are discussing the multifamily sector with Julie Smith, Chief Administrative Officer of the Bizzuto Group and an officer on the National Multifamily Housing Council's Board of Directors. Julie is also a Crew Network Distinguished Leader. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you.
Julie, why don't we start with you providing maybe a 30-second elevator speech about the Bizzuto Group, who they are, what you do.
Okay, great. Well, the Bizzuto Group was founded in 1988. We are a full-service real estate company focused on multifamily. We're based in the D.C. area, and we have basically four legs of the stool, if you will. We have a development company, a construction company, a property management operation, and we do a little bit of home building.
Well, that's wonderful, and it's a wonderful, well-respected organization. Well, let's get started. One of the topics that has been on the forefront for several years now is the affordable housing topic. So what do you think is one of the or some of the most promising solutions or direction our industry should take in solving this widespread challenge?
Well, it is a big problem. And, you know, interesting, it is top of mind for anyone who's running political office these days, but very, very complicated to solve. And it takes a, you know, a really long, long view strategic solution. But there are solutions. And the apartment industry is really eager to meet this rising need for housing. But ultimately, public-private partnerships are really required to address the shortage and provide enough housing for our country going forward. Unfortunately, we got to where we are today due to a lot of unnecessary regulations and barriers to construction to provide the housing in the communities where people need it most. Some of the hurdles that we really need to overcome include entitlement expenditures, zoning rules, environmental site assessments, impact fees are a real problem, and then mandates such as inclusionary zoning or rent control.
Yes, right. Yeah. So let's go on. Let's talk a little bit about on the development side, the building labor and material costs have been skyrocketing, and it's impacting the entire industry, not just multifamily. But how has the multifamily sector managed the increased costs and labor shortages?
Well, it's been a challenge, and we have a very large general contracting business, so I feel like I hear a lot about this on a regular basis. Yeah, the cost of construction materials and labor have grown by over 50% over the last 16 years, and land costs have doubled since 2000. So it's been very, very challenging. And of course, labor materials are the two ingredients. You know, we don't have enough labor, so that's a problem. It's hard for subcontractors to stay staffed. So, you know, we've just tried to be a really, really good contractor so that we keep our subs working and providing them with a consistent business. So that's one. And then the other thing that's happening with tariffs, for instance, the tariffs are have created some challenges as well. But what we found is that instead of everything coming from China, now it's coming from other areas as well. And so the market sort of tries to figure this out. But again, you know, it's the hard costs are being challenged because we're still spending a lot of time on entitlements and money on entitlements, and we're finding that like the delays caused by these lengthy approval processes are really driving up construction costs, and then development standards that really go beyond what would normally be done, changes to building codes. Those are all things that are you know, very challenging and end up really driving up costs. And, you know, hoping to see some relief on the labor side at some point.
And so to that point on the talent pipeline, that is something that the industry has come together on as well. And if you have not visited or, you know, have not used or encouraged others to use, the industry came together to build a website called Careers Building Communities to encourage more students and young people to look at careers in the construction area, because there's really great opportunity for on the building side that perhaps go unknown or unconsidered or not considered by local students. And so hopefully the industry, we're trying to push that forward with this group initiative and building this talent pipeline and awareness about the career opportunities. And, you know, there was a time, I think, when everybody said, you have to go to college, you have to go to college. And I think as a society, what we're learning is that college isn't for everybody. And look, there's lots of great well-paying jobs in the construction industry. So
absolutely, and there are tremendous opportunities for women in the construction industry.
Absolutely.
And if, as we think about, you know, as we think about the labor pool, you know, 50% of it is female, and Bizzuto has been very focused on building, a pipeline of female construction executives. And fortunately for us, one of our top directors in the company is a woman who was a graduate of the Naval Academy and has really spent her year and her entire career in the construction industry. But we need more. That I mean, that is truly sort of something that has to be shouted from the rooftops, because women do need to understand that there are great opportunities for them, but they are breaking into a world that's been largely dominated by men. So that's going to take time. Yeah. But I do think that you can certainly have a great career. And we've promoted several of our developers, actually came out of our construction company. So there are ways to, you know, you can start in construction and do a lot of other things later.
Right. It's a great building block. So let's talk about innovation and how it's disrupting multifamily. It seems like really the entire commercial real estate industry, from artificial intelligence to smart home automation. There's new flexible leasing business models, new connectivity offerings. Technology is moving so fast. And really, I think in many ways, some of the things you were talking about earlier, regulators can't keep up. So
yeah.
What would you say is, I know it's nothing moves quick in the federal or local government. So what would you say is currently the biggest game changer in multifamily?
Oh, well, you know, I think that, you know, first of all, I think that the multifamily industry has been very slow to adopt technology. So I would say that we're behind the eight ball right now. If you just look at sort of the tools, the technology tools that are used in the hospitality industry are sort of much further advanced than what we see in multifamily. And the tools that we're most interested in are the ones that provide more flexibility to our renters. And so I do, you know, there are a lot of people that will say, oh, you know, this is going to be completely self-serve business. And it could be a self-serve business if you forgot the fact that these are people's homes and the human touch is still really important. So what we're doing is we're looking at the technologies that are really not valued, that, you know, where human interaction is not that valuable. For instance, paying your rent or perhaps renewing your lease or submitting service requests or making an appointment to see an apartment. So I think that those are all things that we have become accustomed to being able to manage our own experiences. So I think that is really, I've seen that really become sort of front and center. We're also seeing these after hours tours, or where people can have these self-guided tours where they don't have to be necessarily accompanied by somebody else. So they can really tour apartments at their leisure, and having things like you know, some digitized lock systems and that sort of thing are enabling some of those tools. So we're seeing more of that. And I think that will be good. It's still going to be a high touch business because, you know, these are people's homes and not everything can be answered with a bot or artificial intelligence, but a lot of things can be, which would allow companies to focus. But I think the bigger growth has been in smart buildings. And we started with smart home technology, but it's really more about smart buildings, because in multifamily, one of the largest expenses is utilities. And we're building these communities that have a lot of common area space. So, you know, using technology to really understand how buildings are used and to be able to create safer environments, for instance, and to save money in terms of electricity, which is such a large expense, I think are big.
Let's talk about sustainability. It's also one of the topics that continues to be at the forefront as, you know, development evolves, and we're always trying to think of ways to be more sustainable. And some of that is policy driven, and some of it is just demand driven by tenants. They want to live in locations that are more sustainable. And how do you see the multifamily sector reducing its carbon footprint?
Great. Well, David Schwartz of Waterton recently took over as NMHC chair. And to kick off his term, he identified a number of areas that he'd be focusing on as chair, and chief among them was sustainability and resiliency. So I'm really encouraged by this focus. The investment community, as it's become more global, has demanded that multifamily report on ESG activity. So the industry is thinking a lot about the environmental impact of its communities, as well as the social impact and government's aspects. But on the environmental side, buildings are very efficient when it comes to energy and water. And some of the new intelligent building systems are going to make the industry even more so. And then there's been a lot of growth in these sustainable building products, like new wood products like CLT, bamboo, drywall, living concrete that eats carbon dioxide, and other things like that. So they're all premium products now, but it's encouraging to see innovation in this area. And interesting, to your point, Wendy, about expectations. It used to be when you had a LEED building, which was right the initial, that's how this all started. We said, well, would a resident be willing to pay more to live in a LEED building? That, you know, at that point, sustainability and energy efficiency was an option. Today, it's an expectation, particularly among younger renters.
Yep.
And they're willing to pay for it.
Yeah, they're willing to pay for it overall, but they want to live in buildings that are environmentally responsible.
I agree totally. I see that with my children. Of course, we're crews, so one of the big areas we focus on is strengthening diversity and building an inclusive culture from a business imperative standpoint. So can you tell us a little bit about the progress that you, your company has made at Bizzuto Group in the multifamily industry overall as well, what the focus is there?
Yeah. Well, it's a really hot topic right now. And I feel like, you know, a lot of companies are trying to play catch up, which is really hard to play catch up. It's hard to decide that you want to be a diverse company when you're not, because then you have to, you know, you have to really look, you have to take a deep look inside. But with Bizzuto, we've always focused on having an inclusive culture so that everyone would feel welcome and they could bring their best selves to work. And so that has in turn just invited a lot of diversity into the organization. So, you know, I think that it really starts at the top of the organization, and you know, probably the most important thing that the industry needs to focus on right now is its pipeline, because we don't have, and corporate America has this the same statistics, but we don't have diversity issues at the entry level. But it quickly starts to fall apart as you see people grow into higher level roles. And so really thinking about what someone could do 10 years from now and ensuring that there is an infrastructure in place to make sure someone can get there, I think is really important. I find the companies have a very short-term perspective on diversity. They want to fix it tomorrow, and it's a long-term commitment to really growing people. So I think a lot of the initiatives that you talked about earlier will help, but it's not, you know, you can't hire a woman to be a CFO and think that you've solved your diversity problem.
I completely agree. As you know, my stand on that is, but we are playing the long game here. It's not, let me put three people, you know, two people of color and a woman here and gosh, we're done, because it goes so much deeper than that. And my, you know, my concern is always, you know, one woman in your executive leadership or on your board is not fixing the problem. In fact, studies have shown that you need to have at least three women, whatever it is, the category of diversity you're trying to work on or focus on, which, by the way, you should be working on all of them, which includes LGBTQ, and we have to be mindful of that. But yeah, it is a long game. And I find, and I've said this repeatedly too, is that it's not an HR issue, it's a business issue. And it starts at the top. And once the top makes a commitment and holds people accountable throughout the organization, that's when you see real change. And to your point, I love love what you said about the entry level versus the mid-level. You know, you can bring people in, but unless you have an inclusive environment and they feel like there's a path forward, and we as companies have at the infrastructure to pull people from diverse groups through into leadership roles, it will continue to be a challenge. So you have to think through not just bringing people in, but how do you help identify high potential and bring them through the company. So one last thing before we close this up, let's turn to your leadership. You know, prior to your current role at Bizzuto, you had served as president of Bizzuto Management Company, which you oversaw a $9 billion portfolio. In 2016, you were inducted as a Crew Network Distinguished Leader. You're currently in line to serve as the NMHC chair, which I know you've been involved there for many, many years. You're a top leader in the industry. You're a trailblazer. So looking back on your career at this point, what has been the most significant factor in your success?
You know, I think about this a lot, and it always falls back on the relationships that I have been able to build with just people in and outside the industry. So much of what you learn happens when you're not at your desk. And I did get involved in NMHC really early. I mean, Tom Bizzuto has been a tremendous sponsor and mentor to me over the years. He really emphasized how important it was to get involved in the industry and give back and get on nonprofit boards and, you know, really be a good citizen. But by being a good citizen and being, you know, contributing to your industry, you're contributing to your own career. And I think that you just have to get involved outside the industry in order to really advance your career. So I really attribute it to that and having the good fortune of working with amazing people at Bizzuto. I picked the right company.
I also am going to use this quote that you said, because I do agree with you 100%. Whoever you are in business, women, men, you know, anybody, so much of what you learn happens when you're not at your desk. So get up from your desk, go to your industry group, go to your network, go out and experience people, whatever industry or whatever specialty you're in, being involved in more than one organization, we're all working for the same goals, right? The business goals, the DEI goals, we all want to help and support one another. And so lifting the entire industry is getting involved in the entire industry. So Julie, thank you so much for your insights, your perspectives, your expertise in this. So glad to have you on the show and recognize the powerful group that the National Multifamily Housing Council is and what they're bringing to the industry on all aspects of the development, management, and leadership there. And thank goodness for the Bizzuto Group and all you do in the local market, in my hometown, the greater Washington area, but all over. Your company sets such a great example for diversity and inclusion. Inclusion and for leadership, and we are appreciative of having you share that with us here today.
Well, thank you, Wendy. It has been a pleasure.